I'm Frances Akeley, and this is January 21st, 1989, and I'm interviewing Nancy Edmonds.
Nancy Edmonds Hansen.
Nancy Edmonds Hansen. Thank you, Nancy. It appears to us that your career has branched out in many directions, not only that of journalism, but always, it seems, through the thread of the things that you've been doing, there is some sort of writing involved.
I think that the common thread, as well as writing, would be communication, because being able to communicate in print and put your thoughts on paper is a minimum entry requirement of all kinds of different fields today. And it's been a interesting and a privilege to be able to learn about different areas as a writer. I never say no when people ask if I know how to do something. I say yes, and then I go to the library and take out a book, and then I go ahead and do it. And you can learn an awful lot that way.
How did you develop the interest in this type of work?
I've always been a great reader. My mother was a great reader and a school teacher. And I always assumed that somehow that added up to being an English teacher when I grew up. I went to school in small towns in outstate North Dakota, and there weren't very many female role models in any of those towns. There was my mother, the school teacher, and some of her friends. There'd be the women clerking at DeWalt's Fairway store, and I had one friend whose mother was a nurse, but she had to drive 20 miles to work and back every day to go to the nearest hospital, and so that wasn't very appealing to me at all. And so somehow I averaged all these things together, and I came out with an English teacher. But I always was interested in writing. I don't think I even perceived writing as something of its own. It was just a means to put my thoughts down on paper. I wasn't writing, I was thinking on paper more than anything else.
What was your formal education?
I graduated from high school in Streeter, North Dakota, a very small town in southwestern Stutsman County, where my mother had been teaching for about 6 years. My family's from Trail County in the Hillsborough area, but my mother went back to teaching when I was in about the third grade. And after graduating in Streeter, I had enrolled at Concordia College because I'd heard what wonderful teachers they had there. And I discovered later, through another sequence of events, that wonderful teachers are certainly not confined to Concordia. But in the meantime, I had to get a job to try to support myself through college, because my family was very poor by typical urban standards, I guess. And I came to Fargo the day after high school graduation. And while my dad sat waiting in the car at the curb, I went up and down Broadway, and I applied for a job every place that looked like a business to me. I applied at the White's drugstore cafeteria, and I applied to clerk at the Kresge store that was still open. And I went up and down, and the news was just as discouraging then as I think it is for people looking for summer jobs now. There was none, and it was probably a blessing in disguise that I wasn't hired as a waitress. I would have been in really serious trouble. But in the meantime, the Forum was running a teen page. This was back in 67, where during a period when young people were very much in the news and in style, and there was probably the greatest number of young people in history coming of age in this part of the country. And the Forum had just added this feature as one of a long line of inducements to try to get young people involved with the newspaper. Well, we've learned in the last 20 years that it was pretty much a failing project, but they were trying. And they had an essay contest in connection with this that was open to submissions of writing by high school-aged people. And I'd written an article on psychedelic music. This was 1967, and it was really on my mind. And the longest 15 minutes I ever spent was climbing up the stairs in the front door of the Forum and going into the city room and asking to see Jerry Ruff, who was the entertainment editor at the time, and saying, "I'd like you to consider my essay as an entry in this contest." If I've ever had one single act of courage in my life, going up those steps was it. It was, you've seen the steps, they echo, and it's, yeah, you feel like you're in the halls of something fabulous, whatever it is. And Jerry took the essay. This is after a full day of being turned down everywhere I could think of. Took the essay and had me wait at the counter for a minute while he took it somewhere else. And I wasn't quite sure whether they were going to gather a crowd to laugh at me for thinking that my writing could be submitted to the newspaper or not. And he came back with Lloyd Sveen, who was the executive editor at the time. And they said, "We'd like to offer you a job." And it was a miracle. And as it happened, they had a summer intern program, which was quite new at the time. They were full up with their interns for the summer, and most of them were juniors and seniors at the college level. But they had one young man who didn't last in the program more than another 2 weeks, and they told me to hang on, that they were going to find a place for me. And as soon as he was removed from the program, they slotted me in. And so I continued to work part-time, full-time during the summer as an intern and later as a regular staff writer, and part-time or full-time during the school years for the next 4 years while I was going to college. I transferred to Morehead State as a junior from Concordia specifically because when I'd been at the Forum, I'd realized that there was a whole world of exciting things to do that you're never exposed to in Streeter, North Dakota. And so I thought journalism was the reason that I'd been born at that point. And I transferred over here partly because I had admired some of I'd heard some very good things about the college from other interns at the Forum who were students here, and partly because Concordia wasn't what I was looking for, as it turned out. After I stopped wanting to be an English teacher and started wanting to be a writer in whatever directions that would take me, Morehead seemed like a very good choice.
And how long did you work for the Fargo Forum?
Well, I graduated from college in 71 from Morehead State College at that time. And I'd worked at the Forum starting in 67 when I was 17. I was full-time for probably from about 69 on. And I stayed there until 1974, 3 years after I'd graduated. And at that time, it's hard to believe now that in 1974 there was no promotion pattern for women. But when I was at the Forum, 24 years old in 1974, I'd done everything that I could do, and the prospects appeared at that time to be doing the same thing over and over for the next 40 years of my career, and that didn't sound very appealing.
Well, as I recall, you had a feature column, and did you cover the arts mostly?
Yes. Well, I did everything at one time or another. I was also a police reporter for a period of that. I covered the Cass County Commission and the Dilworth City Council, and I did my share of obituaries and headlines and everything, but that was primarily in the first couple of years. My title became arts editor in 71 after I graduated, and I was the first arts editor the Forum had had.
You wrote with a byline.
Yeah. I got my first byline when I was 17 and a half. And when I look back and think of the general news that I was covering when I was literally 17 years old, fresh out of Streeter, and how much responsibility was given me at that age, I find it a little frightening. And this is an area where news media people tend to be younger, at least the reporters do in the newspaper as well as on TV. And I've always wondered what sort of a tone that gave to the news that we read about ourselves in our daily paper or see on the television broadcasts, because it's very much a young people's starter market. And as you grow more mature and I hope have better judgment as a result of it, you tend to be moved out either by moving up the journalism ladder to a larger and a larger paper, or by doing what was more natural for me, which was finding other contexts to be a writer.
Well, you were very missed when you left the Forum. Now what are you currently involved in?
Well, right now we're talking 14 years later, and I've done everything you can do with a typewriter during that period except radio, and you're filling in a gap for that. I feel like I'm on radio here. I'm vice president for creative services at Hetland Limited, an advertising and marketing agency here in Fargo.
Was that what you did after you left the Forum?
No, when I left the Forum, it was a long way around. I moved to Bismarck as the assistant state travel director and worked in travel tourism promotion for the next couple of years, which was interesting, but it was more bureaucratic than direct action, and I was very unsatisfied with taking the long way of doing absolutely everything. It was a wonderful education, and I met a lot of people, and I fell in love with state government. But if you live in Bismarck, you love state government. Since we moved to Fargo, it's quite amazing how nobody cares what's going on during the legislative session. In Bismarck, you talk of nothing else.
I'm from Bismarck, then.
I stayed in, I'd met and married one of my other two co-workers in a very small department, my husband Russ, he left to teach graphic arts. Photography is his area, at Bismarck Junior College, and I left at the end of, I've always said I had bicentennial burnout. 1976 was very heavy on tourism, and by the end of the year you didn't want to think of red, white, and blue ever again for a while. So I went freelance, and at the time that I started doing that, it seemed like a frightening and radical and very unbalanced thing to do for someone who, particularly, I did a very good salary history.
And how do you work at freelancing?
Well, I invented it. I think every freelancer invents what they do. But in my case, I had a fairly high public profile as a result of what I'd done before. And I'm embarrassed to say that this basically, but the work found me. I didn't find the work. I'd envisioned freelancing as being writing for magazines. And I've had as much success as I've ever looked at in that area. But I became disillusioned very fast because writing for magazines, at least if you're not in a favored position as a freelancer in Des Moines next door to Better Homes and Gardens or a well-known name in New York City or whatever, it's poorly paid, it's very iffy. To survive, you do volume and you learn where your best shot is rather than concentrating on doing your best work.
You wait for somebody to come to you and say, will you work right about?
Well, actually, there's a well-defined system of sending a query letter with samples of writing, suggesting an idea, and you're selling both yourself to the editor and the idea to the editor simultaneously. And that's not an easy thing to do.
No.
But the best parts of it, from my standpoint, were that I managed to narrow down the field and located markets that in areas where the subjects interested me. And once you've worked for an editor once, the chances of working for him or her again are immeasurably better. And so I work consistently for editors of perhaps half a dozen publications, none of them big newsstand books. The newsstand books are much harder to get into. They don't pay all that well compared with the amount of effort that they require from their writers. And so I tended to be concentrating in the areas of regional magazines, the outdoors, which is an interest and was natural since I'd been in state tourism, and a number of trade magazines in the travel industry, for example, and some in education. But there are very few people in this country who make a living by magazine freelancing. Even those that you hear of whose names are rather well known, by and large, I've met most of those people at writers' conferences at one time or another, because it's a rather small fraternity or sorority or whatever. There aren't that many people in the field, and what most of them don't tell you, and what you don't see when you hear of their fabulous exploits in the story they just did for Better Homes and Gardens or whatever, is that magazine writing is only a portion of what they do. And that's the conclusion that my experience led me to as well. Other forms of writing are the bread and butter forms, and magazine writing is more fun, or for some people, it gains publicity for them that lead to other kinds of clients. I did a lot of public relations consulting, which took the form of everything from organizing conferences to some news releases. News releases are really overblown in the context of public relations. It's a very small part of what you do. But I did my share of that. Brochures, I edited newsletters for a couple of state education organizations for many years and enjoyed it a lot. I also took a look at, within 6 months of leaving my job, to my amazement, everybody said, you can't do that without moving to a major metropolitan center. The business isn't here. Within 6 months, and I don't mean to boast about money, but I was making more than I was on my last salary job on an annual basis. By the time, about a year after I'd left the travel division, one full calendar year, I was making about double the salary on my past job. And at the peak of my freelancing, I was making twice as much as I'm making today.
You were just working
out of my home. It really makes no difference. I did my writing at home, but I was as visible as anybody with an office. I was out in the field. I enjoyed it a lot.
And your contacts would be writers' conferences or?
Well, the writers' conferences are more an encouragement than they didn't lead to work. The place to sell your writing is not in a room full of competitive people who also write. It's when you're the one person who can do a story that an editor is interested in, and you happen to be in the right spot at the right time with the right combination of skills.
And you had made your connection with editors as you...
Yes, by mail, by and large, I followed the book. There are all kinds of books on freelance writing for magazines. I took them out, like I said, I never say I can't do that. I went to the library, I took out all the books, I read all of them, and I did some of it, and I made mid-course adjustments, because a lot of the advice is either very utopian or pretty silly. It's more for the, it's more to keep amateurs out than to let professionals in. And if you're a good writer, you can get in anywhere in this field. But I'd looked at where the sources of my income, and I didn't quit to become a public relations consultant. I mean, I didn't quit my job in government, because I am a communicator, and my prime medium is the written word. And I was looking at, I had diagrams of where my clients lay, what had worked and what hadn't worked. And the fun part of what I was doing, in many cases, was magazine-oriented. But magazine work doesn't pay. And so the question was, how can I use the same skills and the same lessons that I'd learned, but put it into some context where there would be a better payoff for the amount of time invested? And that's why, well, that's directly why I wrote the proposal for my first book, which was ultimately titled, to my horror and embarrassment and dismay, How You Can Make $20,000 a Year Writing No Matter Where You Live. I hate the title. The book has sold 125,000 copies.
Marvelous. Was it published here?
No, it was published by Writer's Digest. It's actually F&W Publications in Cincinnati, which is as much a backwater in the national publishing world as Fargo or Bismarck. It was a selection. It was the biggest thrill of my life. It was a selection of Book of the Month Club, Quality Paperback Book Club, the Fortune Book Club, which is oriented toward business people. Very flattering for someone who didn't balance her checkbooks herself. And it was a main selection for the Writer's Digest Book Club, and his excerpts have been used around the country. That was in 1980.
Oh, that's marvelous, but Nancy.
I had never before, and I will never again have as much thrill as opening any old magazine I was reading at the time to the ads for the Book of the Month Club, where you pick four books free and agree to buy four more, and seeing my book in there with Tom Wolfe, Edmund Morris, major people whose writing I've admired. And it doesn't mean that it was the equal of theirs, but they were on the same page.
You've come a long way from
something.
That nervous walk up the
house. I'm not nervous at all.
Oh, that's wonderful.
What the benefit, the way that I sold that first book is an illustration, looking back on it, of what I'd learned. It was really subconscious at the time, but since I've noticed the correlation between the two stories, in that I'd learned that to use my location in I'd learned to approach markets where my location was not a handicap. And there are markets in which not being in New York or D.C. is going to forever put you in the back row. So why waste my time? I don't care if I ever write for Playboy or National Geographic. I might. Who knows? But that isn't... To write was my ambition, not to write so I could boast about it. And if it had been Playboy, my mother wouldn't have read it anyway. But to find... The key was to find markets in which the location was not a negative, was in fact a positive, and could be either used to my advantage or ignored without paying any price. And the book experience kind of illustrates that, in that in Cincinnati, they don't care if you write from Bismarck or Fargo Moorhead. Cincinnati, as I said, is a backwater. If I tried to sell it to Macmillan or St. Martin's in New York, coming from Fargo would have been a curiosity. As it was in most of America, and where most of the books are being published today anyway, which is anything other than New York City, location doesn't have as much impact. It really is rather irrelevant. And in this case, the postmark, it was probably the one time in my life that a North Dakota postmark actually helped me sell something, because they looked at the postmark, I'm sure they snickered a little bit, they opened it up, and I'd said, here I'm a freelancer and I'm doing all this stuff and it's working fine. And they figured and their wonder is reflected in the title they stuck it with, that if you can do this in North Dakota, you can do it anywhere.
Have you noticed any technological changes in your career as a writer?
Yeah, I've been made obsolete any number of times, but I keep trying to catch up with the bandwagon. I did my first work at the Forum on an old standard Royal that required about 30 pounds of pressure to move the keys down, and you threw that carriage and practically tipped it off the stand. And we were still in the hot type era at the Forum. The Forum was slow to change to offset anyway. But there was still a funny smell coming from the back shop a couple times a week when they melted the lead down. They moved big turtles with pages of lead type on it.
This is what year?
This is 67. And some of the smaller papers with more money or that were fleeter on their feet were already beginning to convert. But we used old zinc engravings for photographs and the whole works. One thing I remember about the hot type era is that in the newsroom it smelled a lot worse than cold type did. The Forum began its transition to cold type while I was still there. Now, of course, they're using computerized page composition in the whole works. When I started freelancing, I bought an IBM Selectric typewriter, which was state of the art. It was an extravagant purchase for someone starting out at the time. I had to learn to type over again. I'm a very heavy typist. I still am typing on that old Royal Standard. I make the typing errors you make on an old Royal Standard, and I can still see them in my own work. I bought a computer in 80 or 81, and again, I was the first person I knew who went to computerized word processing, which was an interesting experience in itself. It makes a big difference in your writing. I don't care what some of the purists say. I'm a better writer because of it, because it's easier to try things out and see how they look on the page. And I'm kind of a nut about clean copy. And so in the old days, I would rather settle for wording that didn't quite satisfy me, just so I didn't have to retype it. And it's much faster, much better. At this point, since I joined the agency in 86, I'm on my second computer of my own at home. At the agency, I'm now on an IBM-compatible, a DOS-based computer that is probably, I can tell you exactly, has 10 times the random access memory of the first computer I bought, is immeasurably faster, produces better-looking copies on a laser printer, and the whole setup cost one-third of what I paid for my first computer. And it took me 5 years of payments to pay that sucker off.
You spoke of the agency. Perhaps you'd tell us what you're doing now.
Well, the agency was kind of a logical outgrowth of the freelancing. I had gone, by the time that I finished freelancing, I'd produced a TV show on a weekly basis for Prairie Public TV for, I believe it was 7 years, on North Dakota affairs. I'd written a book.
Was this political?
Yes, it was a news review program called North Dakota This Week with Boyd Christensen. I'd written a book. I'd written magazine articles. I'd done every possible kind of brochure, and I'd edited publications. I'd submitted to others. I'd broken people's hearts who wanted to publish in some of the publications I worked with but weren't up to our standards. I'd done all of the really good stuff. And you reach a point when you're working by yourself where I could make the writing as good as it could be, but I was limited because I cannot technically, I know good graphic design, but I can't execute it. I had a great source of photographs in that my husband is an excellent photographer, and we often collaborated. But any time we were on a project that required a graphic presentation or required audio recording facilities, or video, which I'd become very interested in. Technically, as a freelancer, you don't have the support you need to get your work to the next level. And by joining the agency, I joined a group of people who had strengths in those specific areas and were weak in the area that I represented, which is shaping communications. And it was just it was almost like a marriage that was meant to be. We also, as a freelancer, I function more or less as a one-person advertising agency, so it was a very small adjustment.
And the name of your company is?
Hetland Limited.
And they do other things?
We do, our major clients at the moment are, we do a lot of Radisson Hotel properties around the country. We do Dakota Medical Center. We do communications for Concordia College and Lutheran Northwestern Theological Seminary in St. Paul. We've done quite a bit of work for the National Office of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. We're dealing with primarily clients who are not in Fargo-Moorhead.
When you do your freelance writing, do you sometimes have a problem getting it published?
I have never had a problem getting my work published, but I don't, I think about where it's going to be sold or who's interested in purchasing it or using it before I write it. I'm not a fiction writer, nor am I a poet. I have as much respect for the written communications as anybody in those fields who styles himself more of an artist, but I'm a craftsman. I communicate. That's my job.
You mentioned something about a publishing house that you...
Yes. I got involved in publishing books of specific regional interest as a result of having published my first writing book with Writer's Digest. Incidentally, a completely revised second edition came out in January of 87. And the major difference to the eye is they changed the title. This time it's called How You Can Make $25,000 a Year Writing, No Matter Where You Live.
Is that inflation or is that...
That's inflation. But it's a blow for truth in advertising because I talked them down from 50. So...
But you do have a publishing house.
Yes. After that experience, writing books is the one, for a royalty publisher, is the one way I'm aware of where a writer's work done today provides a long-term level of support rather than just a check that you get tomorrow or, in the case of magazines, 2 years from now that's spent on the electrical bill and it's gone. Because with royalty publishing, as the book continues to sell, you continue to be rewarded for your effort. But I looked at what I made on that book, and as a first-time author, I had a wonderful opportunity. I don't regret it a bit, and I have a much better contract this time. But I've made what added up over the years to some pretty respectable money on it. And yet, I know how much they sold those books for. I have a very good idea how much it cost to print them. And I have some insight today into how the distribution chain works. And somebody made an awful lot more money on my labors than I did. And I thought, who do you suppose that is? And I decided to become a publisher myself. I know who it is. The company is Prairie House, which my husband and I continue, although we're both working full-time with the agency as well. And we've published published books by other authors, including both Agnes Gielen and Boyd Christensen. But our most successful publications has been the North Dakota Centennial series of photographic books with essays on the state region by region that we began publishing in 84. Book 5, the final one in the series, came out last December 1st, I believe. And our partner in the project was North Dakota Horizons Magazine. And it has been a very successful project in terms of everything from public acceptance to being able to pay its own way.
Did you work for the Binford Guide for a while, too?
No, I worked as a freelancer.
I see that.
That was another... That's typical of looking for a local magazine market. I wrote stories for the Guide for about 5 years, I think. At one point, I was commuting between Bismarck and Fargo while my husband taught out there. And then we moved down here and continued with it for about a year and a half.
Is there anything that stands out in your experience particularly as far as problems or successes? Well, I think you've covered some of the successes.
All kinds of problems, all kinds of successes. If there's one, there are a couple things that I wouldn't even say I've learned. They've just sort of appeared in front of me bit by bit until suddenly they were part of my life. One was that being able to write is one of the most versatile skills in the world, and I don't mean being able to write funny or write poetically or be an artiste of the written word. Being able to communicate in writing, even if it's delivered with the voice or, you know, in through another medium, through audio or video or on the stage. I've never written a play, though. Or any number of other things. The written word is the basis of it, and it's absolutely a portable skill. It's an asset in virtually any Well, virtually any career I can think of, including management, including graphic art, including sales. It's the baseline on which you can build almost whatever you want. And it's also very versatile. You can move from field to field and learn a few of the basic landmarks. I mentioned that I've been very interested in video. And writing for video is both very much like writing in general and completely different, in that you need to have your thoughts in order clearly, which you do on the written page as well if it's going to be readable. But also you have to think in terms of time and motion and emotion, and you have to have perhaps a little bit more obvious a framework to organize a piece, because you have to lead the viewer through. And when you're writing for the printed word, you have a lot more crutches. There's a lot more to lean on, and you can assume perhaps a slightly more literate audience too, I think.
Do you think writing is inborn, or writing is by
doing? I think communicating may be inborn. I wouldn't really hazard a guess on that. I have no way to know. I know that reading is the basis of writing, and I know that learning, you can learn to be an avid reader, because that's certainly true of my family, and I hope it's going to be true of my daughter as well, that we read. We watched television. I'm a baby of the television age too. But reading was always both a pleasurable and a practical thing to do, because that's where a major source of our information and our recreation lay.
In your career, has there been a favorite aspect of it?
I like the variety. I have a very short attention span, apparently. I like meeting new people, and I like jobs that have a beginning and end. And I like to know when I'm done. And I love starting new projects. I love talking about starting new projects even more than I love writing new projects. And that's a real advantage. Another advantage of it, I mean, I'm beating this idea of versatility into the ground, perhaps.
Not at all.
But nobody told me when I was starting out at the Forum that by saying, I want to be a newspaper reporter right now, that didn't imply that I would want to be a newspaper reporter when I was 30 or 40 or 50 or 60. And what I wish I'd known looking back, although I wouldn't have done anything differently, is that you can change directions in your career any number of times and only gain by the change. Some of my friends who started out about when I did in journalism have gone on to, they've gone from the Forum to the Minneapolis Tribune. Then if you're very good, you get to go to Chicago. And if you're really wonderful, someday you can go to New York. And to me, that is doing the same thing, you know, proving the same things to a new audience, doing the same process over and over again, perhaps on a more important stage, but it's a repetition. And that's exactly what some of my friends wanted. They wanted to become nationally known political reporters. And I don't have any who made it all the way, but I do have a friend who's covered Missouri state government for the Kansas City Times or News or whatever it's called for 10 years now, and he's happy as a clam, so it must work for him. But I'm more interested in doing different things. And it's been a good foundation for that as well, which is one of the best things that I've enjoyed about it, that you can move horizontally from field into field and apply old lessons in new settings and learn something from it and be stretched as a writer and have something new to think about and new satisfactions.
So currently, do I understand that you're Vice President of Creative Services at Hetland Limited?
Yes.
And with that, you are...
That job involves, I am the principal writer in the agency, but by no means the only one. Most of our written communications go through me in one way or another, but it's very informal. The advertising agencies are very unstructured at this level. None of us are big enough to have specialists in any areas if we're going for top talent. I'm also, as the title implies, I also am involved in the creative groups that both do presentations looking for new business and lay out ideas for campaigns that'll be translated into all kinds of media down the road a ways.
Well, communication is the essence of making the world go round.
We all do it every day, but it's just great when you get a chance to be paid for it.
And it's awfully nice to do as well as you.
Thank you.
We very much appreciate your giving of your time. Thank you so much, Nancy.
Thank you.